Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Good evening. Here's a short story that I remember from the 1960s when this practice was starting up. San Francisco Zen Center was very new. Suzuki Roshi had been in this country a few years. And the feeling was a bit different then than it is now. A generation has come and gone. But the story that I heard, which I had to think about for a long time, still not sure I truly understand it. One of the students, one of the young men in San Francisco Zen Center told Suzuki Roshi, I am going to Japan. And Suzuki Roshi said, you shouldn't go to Japan. And the young man said, why not? And Suzuki Roshi said, you don't know who you are. In those days, going to Japan was a kind of a code. It meant I'm going to practice in order to become a Zen priest. I think that was kind of the way they spoke in those days up at San Francisco Zen Center. And Suzuki Roshi said, you shouldn't go to Japan. You don't know who you are. And I think that was maybe a polite way of saying, you don't know what you are doing, but it also might have been a very direct, you don't know who you are. And I always thought, Why would he say this? I felt Suzuki Roshi was one of the most encouraging people I'd ever met. He was very positive. He was always, I never heard him say no. He was always finding some way to say yes. With courage, you know, just, okay, go ahead. Willing to trust. But here he said, you shouldn't go. So that struck me. Why did he say that? I think it's because he saw something in this person's practice. He saw something. You don't know what you're doing. I think he was saying, you haven't expressed a feeling for it. It's very difficult to do this practice if you don't have some feeling for it. Or a passion. Kind of a passion for what the practice expresses and represents. When you first come to practice in your early days, the feeling is pretty small, a little tiny spark. And the first days of practice, the first weeks and months of practice are pretty important because you either learn to encourage that little spark and turn it into a kind of flame, or you let it go out because of various reasons. And I think what Suzuki was telling this young man is, you've come to Zen Center, but you let the flame go out. You're not nurturing your initial instinct. You're not nurturing your flame. So you don't know who you are. So when we do this practice, it's because we have a feel for something that is beyond the activities and the appearances of our everyday life. This feeling is a knowing. It's a kind of knowing. You know, in some dim way, there is something beyond the appearances of everyday life. But we have to nurture that. We have to stick with it and nurture it. Otherwise, it's not possible to know who we are. The point of this practice is to discover who we are in a very large sense. So when we come to practice, it's a miracle. Because now we have the chance to understand things in a large way. So without this feeling, without a deep feeling for this practice, the practice is kind of surface thing. We wind up going through the motions if we don't encourage our feeling, if we don't encourage our passion. If we're afraid of expressing the feeling for it, we have to encourage ourselves to go beyond that fear and be passionate about the practice. So without a deep feeling for the practice will continue to seem strange and foreign. So these days there are many, many books about Buddhist teaching and about Zen practice. There's a new one every week, it seems. And many are very inspiring and illustrate what the practice is and encourage us to go deeper. And these publications provide a new world view for the Western part of the world. And they promise, when we read such publications, they seem to promise us a fresh way to live. That's how we see the practice when we first come across it. Oh, this is the way to live. This is the way it's supposed to be. A fresh way to live in peace and in harmony and without anxiety. This is what we want, and the practice offers us that. So when we read the literature, we read the stories of the Chinese and Japanese Zen masters of the 9th century or so. They're very inspiring, how they lived and the kind of mind they expressed in the way they lived. And we are inspired when we read the story of Suzuki Roshi's life and what he went through, and the way he persevered when there was difficulties, and he persevered because he felt a passion for this practice. He had a deep feeling for it from a very, very early age. When he was a small boy, he had a passion for it. And, of course, we can learn his story through some books and his lectures, his talks. And the stories tell us about his activities and the words he said. But what they don't describe in detail is the foundation of where those actions and words came from, or in other words, the qualities of his mind. What they brought to his practice and to his life. We can understand the qualities of his mind if we continue to practice and watch our own mind. We need to have the same foundation as he did and as those long ago Zen teachers in Asia. We need to have the same foundation, a mind with the same foundation as they did. Because without having the same foundation, we will miss the meaning of practice. And that's what I think he meant when he told the young man, "You don't know who you are. You haven't found the foundation of practice." So it's not enough to be inspired by stories of other people. We have to stand on the same foundation so that we can inspire our own life and our own practice. That's what Suzuki Roshi tried to do. That's what he wanted to do when he came to this country. To inspire his students to find their foundation. The universal foundation of Buddha mind. So he brought the practice here. And he encouraged others to embrace it through his own efforts, his own practice. I know that sometimes he felt a bit frustrated by his students who he felt they didn't seem to get it. I know he was frustrated, but he had more patience than he had frustration. So he continued being patient and gentle to them. But he was frustrated. There's a story of something that happened during a retreat in the San Francisco Zen Center one year. When people were sitting in Zazen, facing the wall, it was crowded in the Zendo. Absolutely full. And Suzuki Roshi got up and he took his stick. Not this kind. He had a kind that was flat. A blade. Like a paddle. Maybe this wide, but flat. And he... He walked around the room, and everybody was facing the wall, and he took his stick, and he hit everyone on the shoulder, the way they do in monasteries to encourage the monks to wake up in Zazen. He hit people on the shoulder, and he said in a loud voice each time, "You don't know how to practice." Whack! "You don't know how to practice." Whack! Around the room, there may be 50 people in the room. He scolded everyone. and he hit everyone. What did he mean when he said, you don't know how? What was he referring to? Maybe he thought they had irresponsible behavior in their personal life. Maybe he didn't like their lifestyle. Was he thinking that they were misbehaving like children? Yes, they were in those days, yes. The 1960s in San Francisco, you can imagine. Was that why he said they don't know how to practice? Or maybe he felt they didn't have determination in practice. They were just treating it as some kind of fun and games. Maybe he felt they're trying to gain something from their practice. I don't know. Or it could be a different reason altogether. But he scolded everyone. You don't know how to practice. He scolded everyone. He hit everyone. No exceptions. But he was frustrated. But the deeper meaning of you don't know how to practice is you don't know what you're doing. You don't know what you're doing. Or you don't know who you are. You're failing to recognize who you are. And you don't know what your life stands for, what your life represents and expresses. So he scolded them about their practice because he felt they let themselves get distracted. They weren't focused enough. I think he saw that people of that time in the 60s were confused by ideas about themselves. He was saying, you don't know how to practice because you were distracted by who you think you are. You don't know who you are, really. So it's likely he was commenting on a self-oriented practice and not the way of very dedicated students. So his meaning is that the practice is not about who you are, but about what you are. This was the question that somebody asked of the Buddha. Who are you? And he refused to answer about who. There is no who in this practice. So he scolded them, not because he was angry, maybe frustrated, but not angry. He scolded them because he was concerned for their spiritual well-being. The stories like this and stories we read in the books about the old-timers can be educational and they can be entertaining, but they're not meant to be entertaining. That's not why they were recorded. So many centuries ago, they are meant to encourage. These stories are meant to encourage and to inspire, to help us develop practice with clarity. And that's why he came to America. We should not stop with stories, but go beyond the stories and reflect on our lives, reflect on their lives. What is it that the stories are trying to express? What is their foundation of life? If we are inspired enough, if we nurture our small spark enough, then we will reflect on our own life and see what it's made of. And we start to think, well, how can I practice like them? How can I be like him? Who encourages me by his practice? How can I be like him? When we explore questions like that, we start to have a very deep feeling about the practice. That we go deeper into it, and it goes deeper into us. How can I practice like them? What should I express with this life that I have? And what is the foundation of my life? So we should know what principles are vital in our practice. What are the constant, unvarying principles that provide guidance? What are the universal values that can express our true nature in our daily life? When we have a deep feeling about the practice, these are the kinds of questions that we will explore. Our emotions, our human emotions, are very strong and very powerful. They are so strong that they can easily distract us from knowing what we are doing, and can distract us from expressing what our life really is. An example of Buddha's concern about distractions and how they can pull the mind away from practice is in the legend of how he treated women in the very early days of practice. A community, a sangha, gathered around him, large community of monks, all men. And he didn't allow women in the community. He said, no. No to women, because they are a distraction, boys, and it'll take you away from your practice. You will distract them, they will distract you, it won't work. So he was afraid having the women practice with the men would diminish the practice. Well, he finally relented when many of the Sangha members, including his relatives, intervened and pleaded with him to allow the women to join the practice and to receive his teachings equally with the men. So he relented. Soon after that, the community, the Sangha, had grown pretty large. Conflicts arose. It was hard to manage all these people who were now being distracted. So they created quite a large set of rules for discipline and for behavior. It's known as the Vinaya. It was a whole school of Buddhism, the Vinaya school. They were developed as ways to prevent and to deal with problems and to maintain order in a close-knit sangha, to keep focused and to manage distractions. And they were very, very specific, these rules. For the men, there were 227. For the women, there were 331. That's a lot of rules. They must have had some discipline problems. Those were developed by the Buddha. You know, you would think that the Buddha had a softer mind than that, but he felt, boy, it's hard for them to get it. It's hard for them to nurture their spark that has occurred to them. They get so easily distracted. But rules, in any organization, rules are not principles. Rules are not foundational. They are for managing your daily behavior. Behavior of a large and diverse group, we have rules. True practice goes beyond rules. We need to go beyond rules. Practice relies on a deeper understanding than that. A deeper understanding of what constitutes the basis of appropriate and encouraging behavior. What is the foundation? It's not the rules. Those are just on the surface. What is the foundation? Our practice, Zen practice, relies on the universal principles to guide our behaviors. And these principles, if we follow them and understand their meaning, will protect us from our emotions. Principles will prevent emotions from distracting us. And when we are protected from our emotions, we are protected from delusions. When we understand and rely on the principles of spiritual practice, then we know what we are doing. I think of the medical profession, where they have a fundamental principle which says, do no harm. This is a principle. This is not a rule, you know. It's not a rule. This is a way of being. This is an attitude. It's a fundamental principle. It's not a specific rule. It's a sense and it's a feeling for meaning. But when the medical people have that as a background, they know what to do. The principle guides them. And the same in our practice. When we understand the principles, we will know what to do. So, reading the books about practice and using our intellect and our reason, we cannot discover the principles that way. They have to arise in us from another place. You know, all cultures, all societies alike, they really look for beliefs and values to guide them. But those things change with politics, and those things change with emotions. But the principles are discovered through a very deep awareness about ourself and our life. In one of the chants that we do on a Saturday morning, it ends with the statement, don't make up standards on your own. Don't make up standards on your own, which means your intellect cannot create universal standards. you have to discover and practice universal standards, the universal principles. Don't make them up according to your likes and dislikes. Don't make up standards from your emotional and rational mind. So in the Old Testament, we read that Moses went up on the mountain and he was inspired. And he came back down the mountain with commandments that he gave to a confused bunch of people. He made a single people out of a very diverse group of tribes out of his effort to go up the mountain and discover the principles. The symbolism of this Bible story, I think, is very important for us. It means set aside your intellect. Don't just sit down and make up the commandments out of your own head. Go into the clouds. Go into the fire. Go into the earthquake to face the source of things and to face yourself. This is what I think that story means to us. It wasn't some external God that gave Moses these commandments. It was his own effort to discover, what do we need? What are the first principles? What is the foundation? It was his effort that created the commandments. So in our practice, we make an effort to understand the inherent principles, independent of our emotions, independent of our intellect. We must make that effort. We have to make the same effort as Buddha did and as Moses did. We have to have the same passion and the same feeling. You know how Buddhism started? You know the story of Buddha? How he was raised in royalty, but one day went out into the everyday world, and after spending some time there, he came to the recognition that people suffer, and he decided he wanted to do something about that. So Buddhism was started because this man cared. He cared. Buddhism wasn't started because, you know, God spoke to somebody. Buddhism started because this man cared. He cared. And he wanted to take care. This is the foundation of our practice. Caring. Maybe this is why Suzuki Roshi told that young man, "You don't know who you are." Maybe he saw that this fellow wasn't caring. I don't know. So our practice, when we take it into daily life, we have to maintain its universal principles and not let our emotions and our desires get in the way of understanding those principles. Buddha's first teaching said, people suffer because of their desires. And he tried to provide a way for people to let go. And he also said that the other reason for suffering is that we delude ourselves. And delusion really means we rationalize, to justify excuses for going against what we know better. This real delusion. We practice and we get a sense of the foundation of things, but because it's not convenient or not comfortable or it's not so pleasurable or it's boring, we go do something else instead, and we come up with a story, a rationalization that says, it's okay to do that. This is delusion. Always rationalizing our excuses for going against what we should know better. So this story about Suzuki Roshi and the young man, you don't know what you're doing. You don't know who you are. That story can apply to us. Unless we put our feeling into the practice, unless we follow our passion, and we nurture the flame that brought us here in the first place, and not justify some reason for letting the flame go out. Does anyone have a question?
This talk was brought to you by the Canando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.